welcome in to Friday's edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. Lots to get through on today's show. A lot of people joining me. Mark Ogden, Gab Marcotti, Craig Burley, Julianne Laron. You've got Sebastian Salazar, Julie Foudy, Ali Moreno and Hercules Gomez. So much to talk about with them. But we'll start with this big story, of course, which really hit the back pages on Thursday in the UK. June the 30th. This was the set date, wasn't it, that we thought the Premier League would be done and dusted by. This is what the clubs would agree to. It was supposed to be all resolved in a meeting today. However, as I welcome in Gab Marcotti, we'll chat to Gab in a moment, but first to Mark Ogden. Mark, am I right in thinking this meeting, no one even mentioned June the 30th?
That's correct. They had a two-hour meeting by video conference, and the big issue that was supposedly the big issue of ending the season or getting it resolved by June the 30th wasn't even mentioned. You know, people inside the meeting have told me that that wasn't even discussed. Also wasn't discussed were pay deferrals and pay cuts. So what they tried to discuss was finding a schedule to play again, and they haven't even come up with that. Now, there is a valid reason for that. The Premier League are telling me that until the UK government can organise widespread testing for the population and for key workers, nurses, doctors, etc., the Premier League don't want to be seen to be testing their players, testing staff, and playing football again before the average man in the street and woman in the street can get tested. So it may even become a kind of PR issue that the Premier League don't want to be seen to, you know, return to normal testing players while nurses and doctors are still waiting for tests. So basically it's almost like kicking the ball back to the UK government, saying if you want football again soon, and it's not the priority right now, but we need to start testing more people.
Well, let's welcome Gab Marcotti into the show. Gab, listening to the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, June the 30th was a date that was spoken about a lot. Why is it so important?
Well, simply put, football, standard football contracts run through June 30th. And there's a number of players who go out of contract on June 30th. There's also a whole bunch of players who might be on loan right now. Their loan deals end on June 30th. Now, FIFA have said that they're not opposed to players extending their contract for a month or 2 months. They suggested that maybe the legal interpretation should be that when you sign a contract to June 30th, it's implied that you mean the end of the season. So they suggested that these extensions be made. However, all of this is subordinate to national employment law. Most people would come out and say, hey, I don't want my employer unilaterally extending my contract, especially, you know, if they're due to get into free agency. And that's the issue. You need to come up with either some sort of collective deal. You need to have a plan in place. And from what Mark's telling us and from what my understanding is, several clubs are saying, we've had our heads up our backside and we haven't even broached this subject. And is it really worth even considering a plan that has us playing past June 30th at this point?
Mark?
Well, I think it's so difficult for all the clubs involved because nobody knows right now when it's going to be safe to leave the house again, never mind play football again. So every decision they try to make is just wrapped up in that confusion. Now, June the 30th is a key issue. There are ways around it. It may actually get to the point where players whose contract expires on June the 30th have a decision to make, and it's purely on an individual basis. Do you want to carry on playing on a month-by-month contract, or do you want to stop playing? And it may come to the point where one team has 10 players sat in the stands because they're out of contract, and other teams carry on playing. There's not going to be a perfect solution to this. There's going to be some people are going to miss out, somebody are going to lose out. Everybody's going to have to give something up. At the moment, nobody seems to be kind of budging on anything, but there's no way that football's going to return with this perfect scenario of people with happy contracts and stadiums full, and it's just not going to happen. So there will be an issue. There will be an issue that can't be overcome, and it may well be contracts June the 30th.
Is there any sort of deadline, Mark, regarding how far we have to go down this road before they say, right, the season is void?
No, I mean, they are 99.9% certain to finish this season, and even if it means next season starting in September, October, November, the big issue is to finish this season, because starting next season late will cause problems, but at least you start that season on a clean slate. If you finish this season null and void, there's so many financial issues to deal with, and it'll go on forever.
Go on, Gab.
I you know, Mark, they keep saying this, and sometimes I want to shake them, because I don't understand why they are so adamant about this, why they can't come up with a common sense solution. It's obvious that any football you play in June or July or August is going to be under these extreme weird conditions, whether it's, as you said, 10 guys being sat in the stands or the players sequestered in a way in hotels or being tested daily. This isn't normal football. You can't go out and talk about the integrity of the league when some teams have five or six players who are suddenly no longer there, when players are living away from their families for 6 to 8 weeks. This isn't normal.
No.
And I just find it remarkable that you could actually say, you know what, screw this. Let's play the games that we can play, somehow come up with some common sense resolution, and let's make sure we get next season correct rather than screwing up both seasons.
The problem with that is that the common sense solution, I agree, there should be one out there, but in any solution there'll be winners and losers. The only way that there are no winners and losers is if you play the game to a conclusion. The only losers then will have lost on the field. If you have a come to some agreement whereby, like you say, play the key game, somebody will miss out, even if it's a team that is relegated against their wishes or against their kind of playing on the field, or if it's a team that finishes 11th rather than finishes 9th and miss out on £4 million in prize money. Everybody will have a vested interest and somebody will complain about something.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Gab, we'll let you go, but if you want more from Gab, you can listen to the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available over on the website. Mark Ogden, of course, was given the task of picking his best ever Premier League 11. No Thierry Henry in that lineup caused quite a stir on social media. Fortunately, Mark, we're over it now, although, Craig, I believe that you maybe had a bit of an issue with it.
Well, it popped up like a sore thumb, didn't it? I mean, the one thing we're lacking in this pandemic for everybody is obviously something to talk about around sport. So what we need to do, we at that point, all the editors and producers just said, let's wheel Augie out and get him to pick some sort of team, and then we'll just pick it apart for the next probably couple of months, I would imagine. But how? Was it what kind of red wine were you on, Augie? Or was it petroleum or gasoline? What was you on when you thought, I'm not going to put Thierry Henry in my side?
Well, I had three strikers or three forwards, and the first one had to be Alan Shearer. 260 goals, all-time Premier League top scorer. Missed two seasons pretty much through injury, so he probably would have been closer to 300 than he is to 250. So you can't argue with Shearer, surely, no?
No. No, I haven't got a problem.
No? Right.
No.
So, and then the second one, I thought, well, Sergio Aguero, highest-scoring foreign player in the Premier League, surpassed Thierry Henry in January, so he's got more goals than Henry. So, listen, Henry is a great player, I'm not denying that, but then I had one choice to make, a left-sided forward. Well, that's where Henry played at times for Arsenal, but you can't leave Cristiano Ronaldo out of the team. Now, I know he's gone on to bigger and better things since leaving Man United in 2009, but his last two seasons at United, he carried them to the league. Absolutely carried them to the league, and also to the Champions League in 2008. So, as Graham Souness said this week about Paul Pogba, show me your medals. Now, Thierry Henry hasn't won a Champions League with Arsenal. He didn't win the League Cup with Arsenal, but you know, look at Ronaldo, he's won more with United than Henry did at Arsenal, so I think Henry deserves to miss out to Ronaldo.
So it can't be about medals though, can it really, because Alan Shearer's in there, and is, you know, that's not nothing disrespectful to,
but he
to
won
Alan,
a Premier League with Blackburn.
Yeah, but I mean, he could have went to Man United or any club in the world almost, you know, without a doubt, and won, you know, umpteen titles, but he wanted to go to Newcastle because that was his home club, but he still scored the goal. So, you know, I give you that. Listen, if you were to rewrite this, if somebody said to you, give us another one this week, Augie, for the lads, would you change it at all? Are you stubbornly going to stick with it?
No, I'd probably look at the midfield and think, could I get in De Bruyne, Paul Scholes? But I looked at that and thought, you know, Lampard, Vieira, Roy Keane. People say, what about Steven Gerrard? But I think to be in the best ever Premier League team, you have to have won the Premier League, and Gerrard didn't do. But, and also, if you compare Lampard and Gerrard, what they achieved, and you know, Lampard's goals, he's Chelsea's highest goal scorer, ahead of people like Didier Drogba, Eden Hazard. Lampard's record is incredible at Chelsea, often overrated because he didn't kind of tick with Gerrard on the international stage. But for me, Lampard edges Gerrard in this Premier League team. Roy Keane, I don't think you could argue with, and Patrick Vieira was just, for me, more important to Arsenal than Thierry Henry was. So I think Vieira and Keane and Lampard is a good midfield.
Let's move it on then, shall we, to the five inductees to our Hall of Fame that we announced this week. Just a reminder who it was, if I can remember. You've got Shearer, Henry, Scholes, Giggs and Gerrard. Mark, so obviously you would take Henry out.
No, I'll keep Henry in. I think, you know, you have to be fair. I think he deserves to be in. because it is players that have retired now. Obviously, Aguero hasn't retired, so I can't pick Aguero. If I had to make a change, I'd take Gerrard out. Again, he's not won the Premier League, so how can he have a Premier League Hall of Fame, top five, with a player that hasn't won the Premier League? I would go... There's three players I'd put ahead of him straight away. Frank Lampard again, John Terry and Peter Schmeichel. So all of those won multiple Premier Leagues. For me, were probably the best in their position for a period, if not all of their time in the Premier League. I think Schmeichel certainly was. So I think as great a player as Gerrard is, he doesn't make a top five Premier League Hall of Fame for me because he hasn't got a winner's medal.
Who put this together, Dan?
It was a cumulative vote
of our esteemed journalists, which clearly Augie wasn't involved in this occasion.
Well, it was a vote, and it was I think everybody kind of agreed to check out the numbers. I can't remember what I voted, actually. I think I voted only in my top 10.
How the hell can we say, I agree. I mean, Gerrard's been he was a great player. There's not a shadow of doubt about it. He's a multi-talented guy. However, if we've got a list there, and I agree about Lampard, but in particular, we have a list there of players, and Roy Keane is not in that list. It's incredible. Not only does he have the medals, the so-called medals, you know, seven Premier Leagues, FA Cups, you got it, a title with Celtic as well. The list goes on. He was, medals apart, arguably the greatest driving force in the middle of the park of his generation. Yet he's not in that list. Tells me there's some sort of bias going on somewhere within our lot.
Can I just give you the criteria was, by the way? The criteria was, we all had to vote. So the criteria was all the players had to have retired. So I'd have had Rooney in, considering his record, you know, great goal scorer, but he can't make it. We submitted 10 each. So all of us submitted 10 each, and it was a vote. So if you want my 10, I'll happily give you my 10 players and the ones that missed out. So I did Giggs, Shearer, Scholes, Keane, Terry, Lampard, Henry, Schmeichel, Vincent Kompany, Eric Cantona. So, you know, my vote didn't count for everything, but I did vote Henry in the top 10, at least.
I've just been handed Craig's vote, by the way, who did take part. Henry, Shearer, Keane, Giggs and John Terry is the top five that you voted for. No Cantona at all in your top 10, Craig. We had Stevie very much saying that he had to be a top five candidate yesterday.
When did I do this vote? Because I can't remember when I did this vote. So
let me see. March the 23rd, I think it is. Let's have a look.
No. Anyway.
Yes. March the 23rd.
Right. So I had John Terry in there.
10:36 a.m.
Huh?
It's in the morning.
In the morning. Eric Cantona was purely because of time frame for me. Nothing else. I played against Eric Cantona. He's an unbelievable player, but purely, when you look at the longevity of the other guys, would be one of my arguments. Was these guys were there for, unless I'm mistaken, most of them, if not over a decade plus, doing the business. Eric's was a shorter period than that, and for that reason, I think that's why I didn't have him in at the time.
Same reasoning with you, Mark.
No, I mean, I think that with this list, there was a very real danger that you could have had a top five of Man United players, because the United have dominated the Premier League for, certainly they've won 13 titles, so I think I couldn't name five Man United players. It would have to be a balance. But Cantona would, you could have five top fives, and I don't think anyone could quibble at, you know, you have to pick Giggs for his appearances and medals and Shearer for his goals, but beyond that, how can you separate Cantona from Terry, from Lampard, from Scholes, from Henry, from Vieira, from Bergkamp? There's so many fantastic players, you know, Vincent Kompany. It's unfair, really, to boil it down to five, but, you know, Cantona had such an impact in the early years of the Premier League, when Craig would know, United were formidable, and Cantona was the focal point of that team, but, you know, he finished at 30 years old, and it's over 20 years ago. People forget what an important player he was, you know. I had this discussion over the team, you know, people like Dennis Irwin don't get a mention, but Dennis Irwin was, you know, an earlier day Ashley Cole or Trent Alexander-Arnold, but people forget, and we should kind of remember these players probably a bit more than we do, because even though the time has passed, they're still great, great players.
Meanwhile, let's fast forward to today, shall we? Because I heard your conversation with Alexis Nunes. You were talking about Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba, Mark. And Craig Mark was saying that he can't see these two playing together. Do you agree?
Well, if you had a Fernandinho-type character with him at his pomp, a couple of years ago when he was arguably the best in the business at mopping everything up at Man City, I mean, he was incredible. You know, covered every blade of grass. You would have to have a player of that ilk to even have it to stand a chance. So, and clearly they don't have that player. I mean, they've got Fred who's got better, they've got Matic who's getting older, and they've got a young McTominay. None of those guys would even come into the category of a Fernandinho. So I think it's unlikely. Also, the fact is, I think, and I've said before, I think United probably are, and I might be wrong, but I think their thinking might be, we're not even worried about trying to play these two together. Fernandes has come in, he showed his early class with some of his performances. That's not to say that's going to last over the period of 3 or 4 years, but it certainly is promising. Whilst Pogba has been nothing but a pain in the backside for Manchester United, with the odd cameo of good performances. So I would be surprised if they're even contemplating trying to shoehorn these two players in as a priority. I think the priority for them, when everything gets up and running again, is to try and find a way to get Paul Pogba out of that club so that they can move on and they can get some cash back.
What does Solskjaer think about it all, Mark?
Well, I think Solskjaer's been quite pragmatic about it. I think Fernandes has come in and it made it a lot easier for Solskjaer and United to get rid of Pogba this summer. But the situation now with the coronavirus and the way it's affected not just the football calendar but football finances means that United are going to find it really difficult to get rid of Pogba, because, you know, Real Madrid and Juventus, the two clubs that are keen to sign him, but both clubs have been absolutely hit hard by the coronavirus. Finances that have been rocked, and who's going to pay what Pogba is apparently worth? If he's worth £100 million, I mean, not sure he is, but I don't know what the market value is these days, but he'll want a big wage packet. He'll want £350,000 a week, and that isn't realistic now. So I think the problem that United have got is that there may have been a market for Pogba 6 months ago, but now it's going to be so difficult to get rid of him. And I think his contract expires next summer. Certainly he's got an option to be triggered, but his value as an asset is diminishing all the time. So United might lose out on this, and so might Pogba, but Pogba may have to stay, and he won't be the main man. That'll be Bruno Fernandes. I think he's going to have to accept that Fernandes is a hard worker. He's brought inspiration to the team. He delivers, and Pogba is what Fernandes, you know, sorry, Fernandes is what Pogba should have been, but it's taken 4 years and not done that.
That is a good point about when you're trying to sell players now, with clubs wanting to pay and not having the ability to pay top dollar. But I think it's also a wake-up call. Unfortunately, this pandemic has hit so hard, both obviously from a personal point of view for a lot of people, or thousands and thousands of people, but also a financial point of view for businesses. And I think it's a reality call and a wake up for the Premier League transfer fee, the football transfer fees globally, that were spiralling out of control. Ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. Clubs were being held to ransom for players. I think that is going to take a very severe downward motion, because clubs are now going to have to scale back. And unfortunately, if you're a selling club and trying to get rid of somebody like potentially United are with Pogba, you're not going to get that dollar back. But also, if you're a buying club now, then I think we're going to see transfers being negated somewhat, because those surely to God, those crazy $200 million, $150 million, pounds, whatever you want to call it, transfers, can't be sustainable. They just can't. And this is the wake-up call, I think, that football is needed and is going to get.
Before I let you go, Craig, it's the first time you've been on since we published a quiz between you and Don. For those who haven't seen it, how would you describe it?
Car crash. Between two individuals that their brains were barely functioning. And as you said, we scaled the questions back to a total juvenile scenario, and it was still a struggle. Although, I have to say, some of the questions surrounding memories of games from 20 years ago that we played in is pretty difficult. It's not as easy as you might think. But as somebody said on social media, all you would need to do to beat these two clowns is, even if you've never watched football before, is watch ESPN FC for 4 months and you beat the both of them. That's how easy it is. Simple game for simple people. There you go.
Be sure to check out Don. It's fantastic. His reactions throughout the whole thing are brilliant. You can check that out. Thank you very much, boys, over on our YouTube channel. Now, remember our good friend, Emilio Rousseau. He was the former Barcelona vice president who recently handed in his resignation. Now, talking to L'Equipe about Neymar, he said the coronavirus is going to provoke deflation in the transfer market and the majority of clubs will have financial problems. The interest in Neymar is real, but it's complicated. A solution could be payment in installments, for example. It all depends on the will of each party. Well, for more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Julien Laurent. Jules, this installment payments, this would work, wouldn't it?
Potentially, this could work if PSG find their interest in it. Remember last summer when we had the whole Neymar saga for the whole summer, they were not so keen on the installment payment that Barcelona at some point were ready to offer. It might be different this summer. I'm not so sure that for Neymar, at least, the price will be different because of the pandemic at the moment. I think PSG and Leonardo will still have a number in their head in mind. Neymar has 2 years left on his deal in Paris. So I don't think on that they will budge. Maybe in Barcelona we think that the price might be a bit lower because of everything that's happening. In Paris, at the moment, from what I've been told, that's not the case. So again, it's all good if everybody can find an agreement, but PSG will open the door for Neymar again if they want to, like last summer, but at their price, not anyone's price.
Hmm. Where is Neymar? Obviously, you're good friends with him, Jules. Go to his birthday party every year. In regards to how ambitious and how much he wants to go to Barcelona, how much has that increased or indeed decreased from the summer last year?
They've been very clever, Neymar and his people, his dad especially, in what they've been saying on and off the record in recent weeks. As in, we're very happy in Paris right now. We haven't really thought about the summer. We haven't thought about Barcelona. We haven't thought about renewing at PSG either. Pretty much everything is open. All doors are open and that's where they are. And it's obviously very clever. They're not committing to one or the other. They're just saying, let's see at the end of the season. Whenever that is, they will make a decision then. I think what's true is he's happier in Paris. They're still in the Champions League, which is a big difference to the last two seasons, for example, when he was there and even could not play the second part of the season because of injuries. So on that level, we know that he's happier and the way the team is going, especially in the Champions League, has made him happy at the moment. But that doesn't mean he doesn't want to go back to Barcelona. There's a lot of things that still attract him to go back to Barcelona. But I think PSG right now, also showing him that staying wouldn't be a bad thing. So I really believe that he's really 50-50 at the moment, but it will all depend to what both clubs are doing in the summer.
Who's top of the list if he goes? Is his replacement, Jules?
That's a very interesting one, because if they can lose Neymar but keep Mbappe, I think they would be happy. If you want, losing them both would be a disaster, and it's not their plan at all and it's not on the agenda. Losing one and keeping the other, but then you will still have to replace Neymar. You will have to go for a big name. Mm. You could try to go for someone like Sadio Mane, for example. Maybe you could try to go for Kai Havertz. It depends what kind of profile you want to replace Neymar. I think they will have, obviously, a lot of money coming from the Neymar deal on top of the money that they already have. And then Leonardo will then look into strengthening the squad. Milinkovic-Savic, although he's a different player to Neymar, could be another possibility. There's a lot of names that then they will appear on their list, on the short list, if Neymar goes. But I think right now, if you ask Leonardo, would you rather Neymar to stay or go? I think he would probably stay. I would rather Neymar staying because of what we've seen since the turn of the year, and a different Neymar, a happier Neymar, and a more efficient Neymar on the pitch as well when he's played.
Not the last time, I'm sure, we'll discuss Neymar's future at PSG. But for the moment, thank you, Jules, to keep up to date with all those latest rumours. You can go over to Transfer Talk over on the website.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Fascinating stuff from Jeff Carlisle over on the website, talking about the possibility of MLS players getting a salary cut up to 50%. Let's welcome in Ali Moreno and Hercules Gomez to discuss this. Herc, let's start with you. What are you hearing?
This is unbelievable. According to this article, I believe the total payroll between all the players in the league is about $301 million. They're looking for 150 of that to be reduced, to be wiped out willingly by the players. Now, the thing is, there is no language in the current CBA that can force the owners in Major League Soccer to do this to the players. It would have to be voluntary. What I'm hearing is if the players don't agree to this, that famous CBA that they agreed upon on principle that hasn't been signed, well, that may go out the window. And maybe we'll see a lockout. It's an unfortunate circumstance. Owners are realizing that maybe it's not worth playing these games if they're behind closed doors, because they depend so much on the game day revenue. What is the ticket sales, merchandising, what is parking, what is promotion and endorsements and advertisements that go with all the game day. Their TV deal is about $90 million. To put it in perspective, NBA is about $2.5 billion, and football, NFL, is about $5 billion. They can't survive if it's behind closed doors. This is going to get murky. The players have a choice to make. They're asking them to reduce their salary by 50%, but if they get to June 1st, they've already made 50% of their salary, so the players have a huge, really, decision to make here. What do they do? I think this is going to get tricky for the players.
Wow. A lot to break down there, Ali. Let's focus first on the players. If you were still playing, how would you feel about this?
Well, clearly, I would not be excited about it. I would not be happy about it. I would be extremely frustrated and disappointed. But I would have to understand that we live in a different world than what we did 3 months ago. And so there has to be some flexibility. Now, the part that I think would be most frustrating for the players is that you're saying flat out 50%, that's it. There's no negotiation. There is no room so that we can work through this together. It feels very much on the side of MLS and on the side of the owners and saying, that's it, that's our number, and that's how we're moving on, because that's the money we need and that's what's necessary. I think as players, you have to have some flexibility. As players, you have to have some understanding that you live in the real world and that the real world has been affected by something that none of us saw coming and has affected the world in a way that we not only we could not predict, but you would think as players that you're insulated from this. And the truth is that you're not. You're part of the real world as well. And so therefore, there's going to be a situation by which you're going to have to take some salary cuts. And that, I think, can be understandable and can be acceptable if it's done hand in hand with the league and the owners. If it is indeed something in which we're all holding hands together and taking this step forward. What it feels like is essentially MLS putting the players in a situation where, look, you're going to have to take this salary cut, and you're going to have to accept it. And if you don't, then the CBA that we had agreed upon may be somewhere where now it's not so solid as it was before. And so it feels like this negotiation is not really a negotiation as much as it is a mandate. And that's where I think the players would have a difficult time accepting it. But in the court of public opinion, you cannot come out, if you're a professional athlete in this country, and say, no, we're not taking a wage cut. Because let's think about all the people that have lost their jobs. Let's think about all the people that have taken salary cuts. Let's think about the current situation and the current environment in which we're in. And so it would be a major blow for players and the perception of MLS players if you say flat out, no, we're not taking a salary cut. I think the players should be able to negotiate, and I think there's got to be some give and take with MLS, MLS owners, and the Players Association as well.
Herc, if you were still sat on the bench at Seattle, how would you feel?
You know, Dan, I'm with Ali that there has to be some give and take. There has to be a compromise and negotiation here. What I don't understand really is, and I haven't seen it in other professions, and maybe some people out there can correct me if I'm wrong, is they're asking for money paid already to be returned. If they make it to the June 1st date, that's already 50% of their salaries that they would have earned anyways. So I understand that we're all in this predicament, in this pandemic, and we all need to adjust accordingly. But they're not asking for future earnings. They want money's already made. And that's where I think it gets murky. And this mandate that Ali talks about, he's 100%. It's not a negotiation. It's a mandate. And it almost feels like they're threatening the players with, well, if you don't play ball, you know, that CBA that we just negotiated in theory, maybe that goes out the window. And what happens next? We lock you guys out. And if there's a lockout, I really don't know where that puts the Major League Soccer players, Major League Soccer itself, and the sport in this country right now.
I can tell you, Dan, if they're asking for this cut, I wouldn't so much focus on the fact that they're asking for that salary cut in itself. I would focus on the bigger picture, and what does that mean? What is MLS preparing for that they're already asking and putting into plan and putting into discussion the idea of a 50% salary cut? Does that mean, and has this been part of the discussion in MLS offices and among MLS executives, does this mean that they're currently thinking about the possibility, and is this a real possibility, that maybe they're not going to play the games? While they're saying that they want to play the games, that they want to play the season, we do know, and we have seen an article come out and say, look, without the gate revenue, and Herc just touched upon it, without the gate revenue, it's really not all that worth it for MLS teams to be out there playing. And so when you consider the fact that they're asking for this money, is this a preparation and laying the foundation in saying, you know what, there is a real chance that we may not play this season at all?
What if you're in a situation, as Herc and you've both mentioned, in the sense that it's in front of an empty stadium, therefore the revenue's not coming in, but as a player you still want to play, but you're not getting paid your full salary? How would you feel in that scenario, Herc?
I feel terrible, but I think Ali hit the nail on the head here. Maybe ownership in Major League Soccer is telling us it's not worth it for us to put you guys out there and play in empty stadiums and play for just the fans to watch on TV. We're spending too much money. We're not making anything in return. It's not worth it for us. And that, for me, as a player, feels worse.
That feels like this is almost looking through the mirror now, Ali, and a reason as to why would the owners, if they're going to make a loss, why would they force the season to come back in front of empty stadiums? Because if it's all about balancing the books, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, and hence why when I look at the news of this potential salary cut, I'm not so much concerned about what that number means in immediately or in the immediate term for the players, as much as I am concerned about what it means in the bigger picture and the bigger platform. And I think in the spectrum of MLS, essentially what owners are saying is, look, we're going to minimize the damage here. This is damage control situation. And if that's the case, then MLS executive and MLS owners will get together and say, what is the best for us? What can we do in order to stop the bleeding, in order to make sure that we are in a much better place after this pandemic comes and goes? And I think in that bigger picture that I just mentioned, what has come into play that perhaps wasn't into play maybe a couple of weeks ago is the fact that, you know what, they are considering the possibility of shutting down this season for good. It just feels that way. You just take the sequence of events as they have happened, and while they maintain that they want to play the games and they maintain that the possibility of a tournament may still be out there, when you start looking at numbers, and if this reports that we have seen that MLS teams on average will make roughly $1.5 million per game, and they would be missing out on that if the games are played behind closed doors, I tell you, it's a significant number, and a significant number across the league for all teams. And you consider that, you do the math, and you start thinking about, okay, what is it that they're really going after here? And so much so for me that it has to do more than just about the salaries. This is more about the health of MLS in the near and distant future.
Herc, I know I'm putting you on the spot there, and you as well. I don't know if you can actually answer this, but Who makes the ultimate decision? Will it be a vote from each franchise, or will it be Don Garber saying, look, no, this is what we're going to do? How does this all come about? How does this reach a conclusion?
I'm sure the ultimate decision will be a board and within Major League Soccer, Don Garber and his advisors who decide on if this goes through or not. I think the players actually have very little say in this. There will be a reduction in pay, regardless whether they want to or not. How much remains to be the question, but that health that Ali touched upon, listen, it's looking like every day these owners with these deep pockets that we've been sold on, that are multi-billionaires, that have NFL teams, NBA teams, that have other corporations, multi-billion dollar corporations, they just don't see it as a viable investment right now. And that's tricky. At the end of the day, Don Garber doesn't work for the players. He works for the owners. And that decision will be his and the board's to make.
Well, it really is going to be fascinating how this is all going to play out. On a completely different note, a slightly less serious one as well. Ali, just a word on your quiz defeat against Herc.
I have to say, the more I've gone over it, I believe that Sebastian Salazar and Hercules Gomez had something cooking before this quiz. Because there were some questions that, honestly, there was no chance that anybody would ever know this unless you had a little bit of a heads up going into the quiz. The other thing that I would say, and this is controversial, but it's actual fact, when we were about to do the quiz, for no reason whatsoever, Sebastian Salazar decided that the first question would go to Hercules, and from then on it was over. From then on, I had no chance. I was playing catch up. I was guessing Landon Donovan for every question. I got all those questions wrong. How can you do a quiz about MLS and not have Landon Donovan as one of the answers? Come on now. I'm just saying.
That's true.
This felt like Seb and Herc had something cooking, and I was the victim. That's all right. I do it for the team. That's what I do for the team.
I'm appalled. I'm appalled you would accuse me of something like that. Sebi Salazar, I can 100% see it, but to include me? No. I take offense.
Hey, you're 7 hurt. You've heard of this.
In case you missed this.
It's one team.
This very controversial quiz that has got conspiracy theorists online going crazy. Check it out over on our YouTube channel. If you ever miss a show, you can download our daily podcasts. They're available over on the website. Plenty of bonus stuff there as well. You've got Herc's interview with Javier Aguirre, Alexis talking to DeAndre Yedlin. Meanwhile, let's talk about how the coronavirus is affecting the women's game by catching up with Sebastian Salazar and Julie Fowley.
Thank you, Dan. Julie, FIFPro, which is the Global Union for Professional Soccer Players, has come out with an 8-page report detailing the potential implications of the global health crisis on specifically women's football. There's a lot of kind of jarring information in the report, but one line stood out to me, and that is that there's, quote, an almost existential threat to the future of women's soccer. Based on everything that you read in the report, how do you feel about the future of the women's game?
I think it's jarring. I think that report brings forward a lot of grim realities, right? That even though, and here's the most disheartening part of it all, is we all felt in the women's game that we were on the cusp of something, on this, you know, tipping point with women's international football really on the rise, commercially, with broadcast rights, with viewership, with sponsors. And then, of course, this global pandemic has put all of that on to a screeching halt. And I think that's the thing that we're all so saddened by, is that what is going to be the new look for women's soccer coming out of this? And in particular, for professional leagues globally. I mean, there's already rumors about the Women's Super League in England cutting back. I mean, NWSL is going to have to look hard at what they're doing. They're talking about a June, end of June start to their season, which I don't think is realistic, and whether this is going to happen at all this season. So I think the report sheds a much needed light on the situation going forward and what we can do as a community to try and ensure that we have some viability and a sustainability for the women's game.
The report paints a pretty grim picture. It also offers some solutions. What was your biggest takeaway from the 8 pages?
Mm. I think the biggest takeaway was FIFPro saying and reminding FIFA and member associations, meaning all the different federations that run the national teams around the world, that this is a time for them to step up. I think a lot of the growth of the women's game has actually fallen on the back of some of these super clubs. And what FIFPro is saying is FIFA, U.S. soccer, and federations around the world are going to have to prioritize international competition, prioritize using those international windows to schedule games, because the clubs aren't going to be able to do that. And what we know is in those international windows, it's increased visibility, which helps the professional leagues. And so that was an interesting take, I thought, as well.
One of the things I took away were just, you know, we said the word before, but staggering numbers. There was a survey in 2017, 37% of players in women's soccer reported being paid late. That was under normal circumstances, not pandemic. Something like 60% of professional women's soccer players earn less than a living wage. You get a sense of just how vulnerable, outside of what's happening now, the women's game, Julie, already was.
Yeah, and those numbers aren't that staggering to me, Sebastian, because it's what we've lived, right? Which is, again, the most disheartening part, is you finally felt like you were breaking through with women's soccer, with more players under contract, with more support. I mean, just in the past, to get food, housing, and that support, a little bit of insurance, was considered a breakthrough. And now you were seeing players actually making salaries, making money. And where that's going to go when we come out of this is going to be very different. We know that, and we know that we've seen that on the men's side. And I just am super worried on what's going to happen globally to women's soccer professionally, given that it's so in the margins already.
You mentioned the NWSL. NWSL currently in a training moratorium until May 5th. Real quick, Julie, let's change gears. U.S. Soccer Federation, a very, very dramatic couple weeks for what is U.S. Soccer. They've laid off employees. They've shuttered their development academy. Those that don't know, the DA was kind of the elite league for youth development, soccer, both boys and girls across the country. All that with the equal pay lawsuit still unsettled. These are very difficult times for U.S. soccer, Julie, aren't they?
I know. In more happy news, Sebastian, let's talk about this. I mean, I've been talking to people at U.S. soccer, and they confirmed if they were to go on as they had been, right, in a few years, U.S. soccer would be bankrupt. So think about that. And that's not even adding in the equation of the equal pay lawsuit. And so it is a scary time for soccer in this country, for women's soccer globally. And it's why I think it's so important that you have to prioritize going forward with what they're doing and what they're looking at. You know, right now there's still a partnership with NWSL and U.S. soccer. And I think it's actually, there have been many who said it would be great to actually dissolve that. I'm glad they didn't, because I think U.S. soccer is one of their things they're going to have to protect. And I hope this is the way they're thinking, is that they consider the ramifications of losing an entire women's professional league and under their watch. And so, but it is going to be tough. It's going to be tough slog going forward. You could see with 15% almost of their staff being laid off, the situation that U.S. soccer is facing.
All right, Julie, that's all the time we've got. Thank you very much for your perspective. Dan, we'll send it back to you.
Thank you very much to Seb and Julie. Just a reminder, we are off for the weekend, but we will be back for a brand new show on Monday. But for now, I just want to say thank you very much to Mark Ogden, Gab Marcotti, Craig Burley, Hercules Gomez, Ali Moreno, and Julian Laron. In fact, if you want more from Jules, stay tuned, because he's my very special, intimate guest on Extra Time, which is next.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Napa know-how.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. It's supposed to be Shaka and Jules. Shaka is AWOL. Meanwhile, Jules, out of everybody, you think maybe Jules is probably the man who's got everything sorted. Technically, he's fine. There won't be any problems. Daily, he has issues with his lights because he forgets to charge them. Jules, you're supposed to be the smart one out of all of us.
No, it's not that I forget to charge it. It's I underestimate the strength of the battery every time. I didn't think I needed to recharge it last night. I should have done it. I will do it every night now, I'm sorry.
Right, let's get the questions. Did Shaka dance the Macarena when it was at its peak of popularity? Jules?
I'm sure he did. I mean, he always bangs on about how he's got the rhythm and the dance moves and the Trinidad Carnival and all of that. So I would suspect that he did a bit of this. Yeah.
Macarena takes me back to school disco, I reckon. You must have been, you're about the same age as me, Jules, maybe a little younger.
Maybe, yeah. 1980. I am.
When was Macarena? I reckon, what, 96?
Do you think? I would have said a bit later than that. 98, 99, no?
Oh, should we just have the whole conversation about the Macarena and just watch YouTube comments blow up about how we're not talking about soccer and just some stupid dance from the 90s?
Yeah.
Okay. What is one team they would like to see regain their fame and form from the past? Personally, I would love to see Newcastle find their way back to the top of the league again.
Yeah, Newcastle is a good one. Obviously, you could think about Leeds United and their fans and the history at that club. I guess, as well, a club like Aston Villa, that is a club that has won the European Cup before. Nottingham Forest, similar thing. Forest is more European Cup title than actually English league titles. But still, you know, those kind of clubs with the big following they have maybe deserve to be right up there in France. Club like Bordeaux, for example, has been a bit of a sleeping giant for a long time, although they're still in the French top flight. It's a bit hard for them. Even in Italy, when you think about AC Milan and how low they fell, you would want those clubs back to the top to full strength squad and things like this. So, yeah, those, and Newcastle is a good one. And maybe if the takeover actually happens and there's a lot of money coming in, maybe they can build another competitive team again.
AC Milan's got to be in there, isn't it? In that conversation as well. The team that we grew up watching, Jules, doing the Macarena, and then to what they are now, it's not quite the same, is it?
No, you're right. I was reading recently about Fabio Capello and that incredible two seasons he had, 91 to 93, when they won the Scudetti, obviously, but also had that incredible, 58 games in the league unbeaten in a row, which was incredible at the time. They were just so good in every department. And you're right, that Milan team, but even a bit later on as well, they had with the superstars, with Ibra and Thiago Silva and all of that, still in the Berlusconi years, was fantastic. And yet, you wonder when or how they would be able to go back to those heights in a very different business model as well right now, the club. But it won't be easy, and certainly maybe we'll never be as successful as they were before.
Jules, how do you rate Marseille's season so far, and can they challenge PSG for the title over the next 2 years?
It's been interesting because André Villas-Boas coming in the summer with his first year in French football, although he speaks very well the language, he had no real experience of Ligue 1 or French clubs or anything like that, and he's done so well with very limited resources because they didn't have any money pretty much to spend on the transfer window. They even thought about selling some of their stars like Thauvin, for example, or even Payet in the summer. They stayed. He's built a very resilient team, quite defensive, but very efficient in both boxes, really. And that worked out well. Before we went on to this break, it was a bit more difficult since the turn of the year. They were maybe not as good as they were in the first half of the season, but they were still second in the league. I think they will qualify for the Champions League, which would be very good for them because they need that money. Because right now the books are not really well balanced. They've got financial fair play looming over them. And I think the sooner they get some money into the club, the better. And the Champions League will offer that to them.
Final question for you, Jules. When will we see Real Madrid and Barcelona go down the same way we've seen the likes of Milan, Manchester United and Arsenal? Or will the lack of competition in Spain in comparison to England and Italy for the top four help them stay in Champions League action?
Yes, it's interesting. Again, we've had a debate for many years now. Atletico Madrid and Diego Simeone have done really well to challenge them a bit and compete with them as much as they could. Some seasons better than others. Others like the current one where Atletico are six in the table. They're way too far from Real Madrid and Barca to come and challenge. Like you said, that sort of competitiveness that they don't really have apart from each other. So I don't really see that as a weakness. I still think La Liga is a very strong league and maybe for me the best in Europe right now. So I don't see that as a problem. However, it's always good if you've got a very strong Atletico Madrid, a very strong Sevilla, a stronger Valencia. If Villarreal can put a good team together and those kind of things, of course it's always better. But I still think that Real Madrid and Barcelona are so ahead of everyone else in that league anyway, that they will always be the two big favourites, huge favourites. In Europe, it's a bit different, as we've seen, especially in the last year or 2 years. But I still think that they still have a long way to go for anyone, one, to challenge them in Spain, but two, to feel that as a weakness going into Europe.
Julian Aron, thank you very much. Enjoy your weekend. And that, of course, goes to everyone who's watching. We'll be back on Monday for more ESPN FC.